My name's Tom Jackson, and I am talking with Frida Berrigan, who is part of the Witness Against Torture campaign. Frida, thanks for taking some time with us today.
Sure, it's good to be here.
Witness Against Torture is a campaign that has taken place where a number of people went down to Cuba, and that we had talked a couple of months ago with Jackie Allen Dussault, who was part of that. But for those who aren't up to date on what's been happening, tell us about Witness Against Torture, what the campaign is, and what you've done up to this point.
Sure. Witness Against Torture is a group of 25 people. 24 of us are Americans. And in December of last year, we went to Guantanamo. We flew to Cuba and then walked from Santiago de Cuba to as close to Guantanamo as we could get. And over the course of 9 days, we were either walking towards Guantanamo or fasting and vigiling at the beginning of the Cuban military territory that surrounds the U.S.-occupied area, the U.S. naval base at Guantanamo. And we're not a formal organization. We're just a group of people. Most of us are friends, many people from the Catholic worker movement in the United States, who last year began to meet and discuss ways that we could resist the war on terrorism and reach out to and respond to the suffering of the victims of the war on terrorism. We were particularly haunted by what was happening at Guantanamo as Americans and as Christians. And so when the prisoners at Guantanamo, those people who are labeled enemy combatants, began a hunger strike in a direct attempt to draw attention, the attention of the American public, the attention of the world, to what they were suffering there, both in terms of their illegal confinement and in terms of the treatment, the torture and abuse that most recently the United Nations has written about. So when they began that hunger strike in August of last year, we were mobilized into action. And one of the sort of defining moments was this realization that if Guantanamo was in the United States, if it were anywhere in this country, there'd be, all of us would be there, there'd be thousands of people who were there protesting its existence, protesting what was happening there. And the only thing that was really holding anybody back was the fact that it was in a foreign country, and not in any foreign country, but in Cuba, where it's illegal for Americans to, essentially, it's illegal for Americans to travel there. So we thought, we'll go, because we feel responsibility to the victims and feel that it's necessary to respond. And so we did this, we sort of planned this walk and left the United States on December 6th and returned on the 17th. And it was this extraordinarily profound experience, both to be walking and then to be present so close to the base, and then we returned, and the work has continued since. As I mentioned earlier, it is illegal to go to Cuba. Technically, it's illegal to spend money in Cuba, not to go there. But we didn't seek a license from the United States Treasury Department, and on our return, we had to fill out forms from the Office of Foreign Assets Control. And since that time, 10 of us have received letters from the Treasury Department's OFAC office informing us that we appear to have violated the transactions-related travel embargo on Cuba and seeking more information from us. And we've responded to that letter, all 24 of us from the United States, saying, we're not going to give you any information. We didn't put Guantanamo in Cuba. The U.S. government did. And they did it for a very explicit reason, and this has been stated by members of the administration, members of the Justice Department, that the prison is there because U.S. law doesn't extend to Cuba, and international law doesn't extend there either. So the United States has been able to create this sort of legal black hole on the island of Cuba, and where it can act with significant impunity. There have been lawsuits and a lot of extraordinary work done by lawyers here in the United States, but effectively those men remain without representation, without rights under U.S. or international law, and that's in part, or in large part, because of where it's based. So the crime, we said to the Treasury Department, was not that we went to Cuba, but that the United States has placed those men and their torture and abuse in Cuba. So we've responded, and now we await a reply and look forward to a day in court at some point in the future, a day in federal court, where we have an opportunity to place U.S. practices at Guantanamo on trial, even as we are, you know, being subjected to U.S. law.
So the purpose in not trying to get permission to go to Cuba and thereby violating that law was in order to emphasize the point that that the policies are a greater crime than just going to, you know, a place that we're told not to go to. Is that accurate?
Right. Well, we certainly wouldn't have gotten a license to go to Cuba to do what we plan to do. They're very limited number of license and very strict prohibitions about what you can do under that license. It's mainly research licenses, academic licenses, some cultural licenses are given, and journalists receive licenses. So, we saw no reason to legitimate that process by trying to go through it, and we were very clear that we wouldn't have gotten there had we gone through that process.
I want to talk a little bit more about your actual time there in Cuba in just a second, but first, I've got a sort of devil's advocate question for you. When you were starting out talking about the decision to go and to Cuba and the sort of formation of the plan, you said something to the effect of wanting to show resistance to the war on terror, or the war against terror. And I imagine there may be some listeners who would say, why would you want to do that? What would your response be to that?
We feel very clearly that the war on terrorism has morphed very, very quickly into a general war against anything that can be labeled enemy by the United States. And it devolved very, very quickly from a clear response to the attacks of September 11th, investigation of the perpetrators of those attacks, the planners of those attacks, from a response to the crime and the tragedy of September 11th, into a generalized war to maintain U.S. Hegemony and U.S. supremacy throughout the world. So, and so we see just about every misaction by the Bush administration legitimized by it being in opposition to terrorism and the terrorists and the bad people, and this very effective fear-mongering coming out of Washington. And hundreds of thousands of people have died in the last 4 years as a result of that. And billions and billions, hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent. And Americans are no safer. In fact, you know, even the Central Intelligence Agency has said that the way in which the war in Iraq is being perpetrated is increasing insecurity, is fomenting new terrorist organizations, is providing a great new motivator for terrorism. So they're really the war on terrorism is kind of this has become this new operating myth under which the United States can assert itself throughout the world, and good people, innocent people throughout the world have fallen victim to that. Now, to say that, you know, there are people who want to harm the United States. There are steps that a president can take, but that the complete militarization of all of this and the downgrading of any other tools to respond has created this situation where, you know, whereas the Bush administration says you're either with us or against us, and it's a profoundly simplistic view of foreign policy. And as Christians, this group is made up of Christians in the tradition of Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker Movement. We really saw that under the war on terrorism, the works of mercy, which are central to our faith, and feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, visiting the prisoner, and other works of mercy are illegal in this framework. You're either with us or against us. And so we sought to reassert humanity, reassert the humanity of the victim, and to reassert the importance of the works of mercy, and to do that publicly, to do that openly, to do that in contravention of the law of the land, and to just catalyze a trend towards people being first and policies coming second.
We're talking with Frida Berrigan from Witness Against Torture. Frida, I want to get back to your time in Cuba. As you were doing that walk from Santiago to Guantanamo Bay, did you have a lot of chance to interact with the Cuban people? And if so, you know, what was their response to what you were doing?
There's one main road between Santiago de Cuba and Guantanamo, and we walked along the side of that road. And so there were obviously there are cars and trucks going back and forth all the time, and then people walking along the road, biking along the road, and then little towns that we went through. And people were extraordinarily warm, and even though we didn't carry banners or big signs or were, you know, sort of clearly identified in any way, everybody knew. The word traveled up and down the road, and we were greeted all the time with people shouting out, "Oh, you're going to Guantanamo? You're walking? That's so far!" And people shouting words of encouragement. We camped along the way, were given hospitality in the front yards of Cuban families and in their backyards. Can you imagine a group of foreigners walking through the United States and knocking on doors and being welcomed and being shown such hospitality, especially if they were from a country like Cuba, who is their, you know, I mean, we're the enemy in Cuba, we were just welcomed with open arms. There was one, we passed one school where all of the school children, you know, maybe 300 young people came out and they sang to us as we walked by. And unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately for them, we didn't sing back. But so there was this extraordinary warmth and this real appreciation of what we were doing. Cuba is very, very keenly aware of the United States all the time and lives under this embargo, economic embargo. And feels occupied. The United States has held the territory of Guantanamo for 100 years since the Spanish-American War, and they're very, very sensitive to it, and they're very sensitive to what's happening there, the torture and abuse that's being carried out by the U.S. military there. But they feel as though their hands are tied. There's not a lot besides, you know, speeches condemning it, and resolutions in the General Assembly of the United Nations, there's not that much that they can do about it. And so I think we, you know, felt as though we were walking for a lot of people in the United States, but then in part we were walking with the Cuban people and voicing in or amplifying their opposition to what's happening on their soil. So we didn't encounter a single negative person or negative word the entire time we were there. And our day was, you know, we spent all day walking. We began each day with the prayer and the liturgy. We would walk for a few hours in silence. Each of us adopted a prisoner from Guantanamo. I walked with a man named Murat Kurnaz, who is originally, he's of Turkish background. His parents are from Turkey, but he was born and raised in Bremen. And he's a young man and has been held in Guantanamo since October of 2000. Well, was arrested in 2001 and brought to Guantanamo and exists in this even more profound legal limbo because the German government says, well, he's not German, he's Turkish. And the Turkish government says, he's not Turkish, he's German. So we would walk with the stories of individual prisoners. We would sing sometimes. We would break for our meals. And then camp, as I said, camp along the side of the road. And then when we reached Guantanamo and reached the military checkpoint that the Cubans maintain, we camped out, set up a camp, and began a vigil. We vigiled for 4 days straight, each of us taking turns in periods of intentional, deeply intentional prayer and vigiling. We did 2-hour shifts of that. You know, I've been Catholic all my life, but didn't ever learn the rosary until being in Cuba, which was kind of interesting. It was a wonderful way of sort of keeping the rhythm of the time and reflecting from our position on, you know, Christ himself being the victim of torture, and feeling that sort of connection as well, and we fasted for 4 days while we were there, about 5 miles from the prison camps where the men are actually being held.
So that was as close as you got, was 5 miles.
That's right. The U.S. base at Guantanamo is surrounded by a mined area. Both the Cuban and American militaries have placed mines throughout this swath of territory, and then there's the Cuban military zone. So we weren't able to get access into the Cuban military zone, and then obviously the no man's land was all the landmines would have been off limits to us as well. We did call the base and request permission to come onto the base. That permission was denied. But we were pretty clear that we would have been very surprised to get any closer than we did, just because of the nature of the tense relationship between the Cubans and the Americans at that particular point. But when we talked before we left about what would constitute success, one of the things that we said was that if the prisoners knew we were there, and we were able to be there in their minds and in their hearts, and if our message was clear to them, that would be a significant, that would be worth all of what we, you know, all of the work that we put into the trip. We recently received word from the lawyer of one of the detainees that, yes, indeed, they did know that we were there, and that they were profoundly moved by the action and very grateful to us, and that this prisoner asked his lawyer specifically to find us and to pass that message on to us. So that that was just an amazing confirmation of the spirit in which we went, and in the importance of this sort of human being to human being, person to person sort of work that seems so critical at this time.
So not everybody from Witness Against Torture has had a fine levied against them, is that correct?
Right. Well, none of us have actually had fines yet. 10 of us have received these letters from the Treasury Department. And it's sort of arbitrary who has received letters and who has not. I've received a letter. Others have received a letter. But we have two husband and wives who were both on the trip. And in both cases, the women have received letters, but the men have not, which is just, it's just sort of interesting how this has all worked out. But we did respond as a community. The consequences are, they're not immediate, but they are serious. The law states that people who violate this ban could be subjected to $250,000 fines and up to 10 years in prison. Now, no one has been hit with a fine that large or with prison time, but it's not an insignificant violation.
Right. From what I've heard, the Bush administration has got more aggressive in terms of fining people who violate the travel ban to Cuba. But
that's right. It's interesting, you know, in light of all of the budget cuts and belt tightening that is happening in Washington recently. This Office of Foreign Assets Control, and particularly the Cuba branch of it, has actually been was defunded for a number of years, and which meant they didn't have the money to go after people who went to Cuba. But now that office is fully funded now and is aggressively pursuing people. When we went to Cuba and inquired with lawyers about what would happen, they said, "Oh well, you know, most people get some sort of letter, you know, within a year, maybe 18 months, almost 2 years after they go seeking more information." And we got letters, you know, 3 weeks after we came back, and so there seems to be a real acceleration of this and desire to be much more aggressive.
Okay, well, Frida, we're just about out of time, but in the last minute or two, tell people first about Witness Against Torture's website, and also, you know, what can people do if Witness Against Torture's campaign resonates with people in some way? What can they do to help?
Sure. We do have a website. It's witnesstorture.org, and that's one word, all letters together, witnesstorture.org. I mean, there's a lot of work that's being done on behalf of the prisoners at Guantanamo by organizations like the Center for Constitutional Rights, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International. So, and all of their websites have Guantanamo Action pages, which are extraordinary resources. And we encourage people to go there. And from those sites, the CCR site is ccr-ny.com, I'm sorry, .org. And from their Guantanamo Action site, you can write letters to your member of Congress. You can download the text of a play about Guantanamo. I think the most important thing that people can do right now is anything that would humanize and tell the human story of the men who are there. Things that contradict and call into question the demonizing and dehumanizing of the men that are there, and highlights how profoundly unjust this whole establishment, prison, enemy combatant, torture, indefinite detention, rendition establishment really is, that's a form of terrorism. So on Amnesty International's website, there are profiles of the men who are held in Guantanamo, and their stories, and this play on the Center for Constitutional Rights website is an extraordinary resource. We are talking about building Guantanamo prison cells on college campuses in front of the Justice Department and the White House in Washington, anywhere where people congregate to just sort of manifest how awful this is, and to put it into the front of people's minds. So those are all important things that people can do. And we will also be posting to our site some different ideas of actions that people can take around Guantanamo. And maybe just the final thing is that, you know, in the last 2 weeks, we've seen an incredible acceleration of opposition to Guantanamo with the publication of the UN report that calls for the prison to be shut down and for the men there to be tried and released. And so, and then we've seen in newspaper editorials around the country calling for that same thing. So there is this this new energy around that that it seems important to build on right now.
Well, Frida, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom.
All right, Frida Berrigan from Witness Against Torture, and our thanks to her for spending some time with us today. My name's Tom Jackson for Joe Public Media, and thanks to Stanley Longstaff for sound engineering today. You're listening to WSCA LP 106.1 FM in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.